This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Over the last few weeks, we've talked a lot about the fiscal cliff. But one of the few remaining fiscal cliff stones that we've left unturned is how the new tax rates will affect how much money people give to charities. Joining me to talk through this is Paul Shervish, Director, Center of Wealth and Philanthropy, and Professor in the Department of Sociology. Paul Shervish, welcome back.
At Boston College.
At Boston College. Left that off. Welcome back.
No, they would shoot me if I didn't say that. Callie, it's a pleasure to be here. You really do ask a key question here, because this is a huge debate, not only now, but way back when the tax rates were 90% and got lowered to 70%, the high marginal tax rates. Charities never liked that. Mm. Because our listeners need to understand this is what could be called the discount rate, the tax effect. If you have a 90% tax bracket, it costs you 10 cents to make a dollar contribution, because Uncle Sam is going to give you a tax deduction of 90 cents so you can make a larger contribution. And then when it went from 70 to 50, there was complaints by the charity sector. And then it went from 50 to 39, and then it went from 39 to 35, and now we're back to the 39.6. And with all the hullabaloo about the tax rates in all the studies that have been done by those that support the increase for the wealthy, saying that the increased tax rate will lead to more charitable giving by them. Other people say that the limit on deductions is going to lead the wealthy to give less. The range is that it's going to affect $2 billion to $7 billion in charitable giving in a negative way.
So less $2 billion, rather.
To $7
billion. To $7 billion.
Depending on who's saying what. There are others that are saying this is going to increase it to $3 billion.
Yes, that's what I've heard. So let me stop you there, Paul Shervish, Director of the Center on Wealth and Philanthropy and Professor in the Department of Sociology at Boston College. And we're talking about the impact the fiscal cliff compromises, that last-minute rushing-around deal, will impact charities and charitable giving. So I wanted to stop you there because I want to explain to people, first of all, the donation itself was preserved so that if you made a gift to a charity at the end of the year, you can still write it off your taxes. And I say that because that wasn't a given. That was on the chopping block, that maybe that would go away in all of this discussion. That stayed for the moment. And in fact, those people who make more in the highest tax brackets now can have more to be able to do, more from the government, in that they went from 35% to 39%. So it's a better deal for them if they give more, as you've explained. But there's a lot of confusion about what may happen. And first of all, just the donation itself is at issue, because we still have the debt ceiling conversation to happen. And also we're going to have that other fight, the remaining fight about where the cutbacks have to be. So it's not over.
That's right. And what we have to understand is that when we talk about incentives for charitable giving, there are two countervailing, opposite forces. One force is the discount. That's what we've been talking about. How much charity you can buy with a dollar. That's the tax rate issue. The other one is what they call the income effect or the wealth effect. Now, there's a couple of natural experiments that have taken place in the recent years. One is that we had, from 2000 on, we had these tax decreases. Charitable giving did not go down, even though the discount rate went down. Why? Because the countervailing force, that of economic growth, that of the income effect, far outstrips the tax effect. If, for instance, and don't forget, we kept the same tax rates from the year 2000 all the way through the recession. And what we ended up with, without changing tax rates during the recession, was a decline of over $350 billion in charitable giving that took place if we didn't have the recession.
Well, that's because people had less money.
That's the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. So the tax effects, talking about $2 billion, talking about $7 billion negative, talking about $3 billion positive, is just change in the annual $300 billion charitable enterprise. That is how much is given each year. So these tax rate debates are about a very small proportion. And you said fiscal cliff?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton's adage comes right in here. In philanthropy also, it's the economy, stupid.
Mm.
As the economy grows, even without change in tax rates, we saw charitable giving decline, and now we're starting to see it return, even before we had this latest change in tax
rates. Because the economy is recovering some parts
of it. That's exactly right, and that is where the big hit comes in. So if you want to have public policy, growth in the economy, and nobody denies that that's part of it, instead of focusing on all these tax rates, which are just change, as I said, the real issue is going to be the recovery in the economy. Now, one thing that's happened is the upper end is starting to recover much more than the bottom end.
That's the 1% versus we 99%.
Or 2%, which is where he has his numbers. And we can talk about that. There are $1 million. When we get to the top 1%, we're talking about 660,000 households in the country. And if we take all of their income, not AGI, no haircuts, that's
AGI?
Adjusted gross income. That
Thank
is
you.
What you've adjusted after. It's not your raw income, but let's just take the raw income. These are Federal Reserve numbers now.
Mm-hmm.
They make a $1.6 trillion a year. And let's just take 10% of the money, not worry about an added 4% to make it 39%. Let's just take 10% over and above anything we do. You know what that provides to the federal government?
What?
$161 billion a year when we're going 1.5, 1.4 trillion deficit each year, adding to the debt. So you see, taxes alone get nowhere near this. And that is true in philanthropy as well.
Mm.
The tax debate is not as important as the economic debate and economic growth. It's a remarkable difference.
Well, so there's a lot of other things going on while we talk about the economy. As one of the things that you wrote about is that people who are less, they're not the 1%, but they're not, maybe not the 99, they're somewhere in the middle.
At 400,000 in income, you're about 2%.
Okay, so if you're not feeling very liquid, okay, meaning that you have cash flow at hand, you don't have to sell something. You don't have to run around. You can put your hands on some cash. That doesn't make you feel, quote, wealthy or feel recovered in the economy such that you could give. You don't feel that you can.
Well, we have one thing that happens in Massachusetts here. Look at all the private education. You know, being a Midwesterner, I mean, people, you would know, but people don't have any idea that there's world-class state universities, Wisconsin and Indiana and Illinois and University of North Carolina and Texas at Austin and Berkeley. I mean, that there are these other institutions, and we spend so much money on private education here. Fair enough. I'm not objecting to that. But when you start paying $8,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 for your kid's high school, and then you want to pay to go to one of the private universities here, $125,000 for one kid, probably more by now, you got to earn $200,000 to pay the $125,000. All of that challenges the charitable giving by the lower income and middle-income groups in Boston and Massachusetts.
And don't we know, Paul Shervish, that in general, I mean, I'm not saying that wealthy people haven't been generous. They have been. But in general, folks who make less than the wealthy have been sort of regular contributors to charity when you all is said and done and you look to see, you know, the kind of stuff that people have done. Now, maybe it's not the same numbers, but they're regular about it.
Listen, that is absolutely correct. Let's just talk about one thing. You got a cab driver. You got a family? Yes. Where are they? They're in Syria. They're in India. They're in Pakistan. They're in Turkey. They're in Mexico. Do you send them any money? Of course. Not counted in any of the philanthropic dollars is $100 billion a year of regular immigrant people sending it back, sometimes for a big investment, but rarely that, for poorer family relatives back home. And when we do our statistics on charitable giving, that personal assistance, people working very hard to take care of people that they love in another country, not to mention taking care of loved ones here, that is not counted, that other $100 billion to add to the $300 billion. But that is financial care as much as giving to WGBHs. And you understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we did a diary study of people, regular people, not wealth holders. And we found out that for personal assistance, mainly to relatives, and these people did not live with you. They were not dependents. We're not talking about college education or wedding gifts or inheritances. When we did this diary study in the Boston area, a random sample, we found out that the amount of formal charitable giving, statistically countable, was almost exactly what the national average was that year. But they gave five times more. And so they gave, instead of just the $1,400, they gave $7,000 more a year to parents, to children not living with them, in kind, such as a place to live in, a car, not inheritances now, not gifts for weddings, but because people are in need. That's the network of care that is undergirding and is far more profound and active even in this recession than even formal giving.
So you have that to consider. People are giving, not in perhaps traditional charities. You
That's
have
right.
the regular contributions that regular folk used to make, but they are now in a recovering economy, not
That's
a recovered economy. So they have to think about now, where do I give? In fact, let me quote a friend of mine who would be the 2%. And she said, every year I have about 5 or 6 envelopes in December that I look at and I just write a check. I've been doing that for about 10 years now or so. She said, this year I had to ask myself, which of the two can I send something to? So now we see the impact on the 2% and their ability, because they don't have, they're not as liquid and they don't have it. They're still recovering. So what now, if we have all this other stuff at stake, because I want to come back to this fiscal cliff discussion because it's not done in Congress, and they haven't said, either side, Republicans or Democrats, that they won't take even the basic donation deduction off the table. That may be back again as something that could get chopped.
I think that that won't happen. I think they won the day on that one, the charity advocates. There might be a slight decrease. Now, there's one way in which there's been a dramatic increase in kind of a subtle way if on the tax side. Now, remember I said that's not where the big hit comes. But don't forget, for that upper group, we've raised the capital gains tax from 15 to 20. So if you're going to give that to charity, you don't pay the capital gains and you get the 39.6 deduction. So it turns out to be 39.6 plus 20. So 59.6.
So that's a better deal for the 1%.
So there are these incentives. Now you have the removal of the deductible amount on their itemized deductions, And so there's going to be that 3% cutback depending on your income as you get higher and higher. So there's going to be countervailing. There's going to be opposing things. But what do I predict? You are so correct when you say it has to do not just with money, but with disposition. We did a study in which we showed that regular people, now let's just talk about them, the more they had confidence in their own family's financial future, for the same income group, for the same number of children, and so on, they gave much more than those who didn't have the confidence. For the upper group, those who express that they are high on a scale of financial security, having solved relatively permanently and completely their standard of living indefinitely into the future, the more they rate themselves financially secure, dramatically more percentage of income, percentage of wealth, and therefore total dollars. So your notion that all of this is dispositional as well as simply financial and financial growth is absolutely correct. And these insecurities are not yet over and haven't led to a recovery of charitable giving.
And I'm just going to put this out there. The insecurities can't be over if there's still a lot of discussion about where new taxes will be and cutbacks will be that have yet to happen, but will be happening in the next couple of months in Washington.
Well, that's been the complaint of business people for years, as you know. You always hear, we don't know what are going to be the rules that are going to come up.
But this seems especially unstable now. Last-minute deal in December, still something to work out in these 2 months.
Yes, you're right. I just think that when you get way up there, your ability to give, even though some surveys are saying they're not quite ready yet, their ability to give has not been tarnished or diminished. And there are some people that are doing this. But your sensitivity about this, see, I think there's something else, knowing you and your background and what you talk about a lot, is what is also part of this insecurity is what is going to happen to government expenditures when we deal with a fiscal cliff. And does that create even more insecurity for people that comes from government lowering the rate of growth in some of the programs as population grows? And I wouldn't be surprised if that was also part of what we're trying to figure out.
I think that has to be absolutely, because charities actually have been asked to pick up and close the gap in some areas that they hadn't been while, you know, during the recession particularly.
I just want to kind of dispel this notion, even though charities say that and they do have to pick it up. But charity is $300 billion. 32% of it. This is, and then individual giving is about $220 billion. 35% of that goes to your churches. And then we have recreation, and then we have this. Now, it has been nice that in this recession, we have seen social service spending go up. But not only is social service spending go up, let's say scholarship funds have gone up. That doesn't show up in social service. It shows up in education. But I think the bottom line is that this expenditure that charities can anyway make up for, the $2 trillion a year with $100 billion revolving around kind of care for the poor or social services is, I know it's a burden on them, but the notion that that can be done is, or that's your responsibility, is a very hard burden to bear.
Yeah. And I note that, as you note, that some of the money to sustain charities that we know, like the Salvation Army, for example, comes from the government. So if there are cutbacks in the government, then there will be, that's a double whammy to fill, because you got to make up the gap if there's some cutbacks from the government, and then if I'm the regular person not giving. And I note the Salvation Army did say that after this past Christmas, they lost they didn't make up a lot of the money that they typically make up from their Red Can campaign. So, you know, this is tough right now for
but
charities.
In the end, economic growth will relieve the government from some of its expenditures, will also lead to other people being able to contribute more, and taxes will go up. I'd say about 60% of all this fiscal cliff in the long run is going to have to be handled by economic growth.
So we're all going to cross our fingers and lift up positive thinking for economic growth. Thank you so much, Paul Shervish. We've been talking about how the fiscal cliff could affect charitable contributions, and I've been speaking with Paul Shervish, Director, Center on Wealth and Philanthropy, and Professor in the Department of Sociology at Boston College. Thanks again.
Callie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Hey, Callie.
Edgar Herwick, what you got?
So you guys were just talking about money. Money's got that smell to it. You know, you smell a crisp dollar bill. Smells really good.
New money.
Do you generally think of yourself as somebody who has a good sense of smell?
I have an excellent sense of smell.
Really?
Yes.
How did you develop that?
I can just tell if something is off or even something that smells good, I can just go right to it.
All right, well, stay up for this next segment because we're going to be talking with somebody who basically smells things for a living. Pretty
I know,
cool.
I need his job.
Yeah. All right, maybe that's a future job for you. That's Callie Crossley. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio.